Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, how big is your love? Well, it's all relative. And what is love? What do we mean talking about big love or love at all? What do we need to do about it? Can't we just love naturally? Maybe we can't. Maybe we need to even learn to love ourselves better. So to help us do this better is the author of a wonderful book that I just read called Big Love. And it's such a help. It's an interesting title because it actually challenges us in ways that we don't expect. And so the book really helps us not only have big love, but to love ourselves anyway. Just to be able to love at all. So let's talk about it. And as a guest on Energy Stew is the author of Big Love, Scott Stabile. Scott, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me, Peter. I'm happy to be here.
It's so wonderful to talk about this with you because this is a book of overcoming struggle. So we're not just being flippant about love.
Right.
It's about climbing into the hardships of finding that love and of living it. And you've been forced to because right away as a teenager, love was taken away from you.
Yep.
So can you tell us what happened?
Yes. Well, my parents were shot to death when I was 14 in their market in Detroit. So that was obviously a very shocking and traumatic life experience, and one that I survived at the time, I think, because some part of my subconscious knew just to compartmentalize it and lock it away. And that's what I did for many years. You know, I would, I don't think there are rules to grief and how we grieve. I think that however a person grieves is okay. And at that time, the only way I moved forward was basically not talking about it at all. Obviously I thought about my parents and I thought about what happened to them, but I never discussed it even with my siblings. I created a big secret around it with friends, never brought it up. Any conversations that steered toward family, I would manipulate away from family so that people wouldn't know that I didn't have parents. And it was too overwhelming. You know, it was too overwhelming for me to face. And it was also not, I lived in suburban Detroit at the time, so most kids had parents. And the ones that, you know, and certainly most kids didn't have parents that were murdered. So it just felt like this big secret I had to keep.
But also, as a teenager, you're too young to understand.
Oh yeah,
what that means.
Yeah, I didn't have any consciousness around any of it. So when I reflect back on those years, because really from 14 until I was in my early 20s, I would cry once a year and lock it away and move on with my life, and that's how I dealt with it. And it wasn't until I moved to San Francisco after college and got a job at this new age metaphysical store with all these amazing books on self-help and healing and all of this stuff, that I started to see that though it had served me to bury the grief the way that I had, it had served me well for many years. It had also prevented me from really connecting as deeply with other people, because I'd put such a wall up around the secret of this story that I'd also put a wall up to the deepest possible connection. And so I started to shift my openness to just being present with grief. Like, I started to cry more. I started to rage more. You know, I started to feel all those things that I didn't allow myself to feel as a youngster, because I think I knew I couldn't handle it. And in my 20s, I knew that I could. You know, and the only way we realize we can handle feeling is if we let ourselves feel. You know, we're so afraid to feel our sadness and to feel the pain of being human that we can tend to just numb and escape.
Well, one thing about such a profound experience is that it made you so much more vulnerable in life to examine yourself, to see yourself through that grief. And as I had mentioned to you earlier, before the show, is that I also had a terrible tragedy when I lost my father as a teenager, suddenly, unexpectedly, and really struggled through many years after that. And maybe for both of us, it brought us on this path of helping others and wanting to share what we've learned about our own suffering to help other people handle theirs. And also, you have other things in your life that were terrible. You have a brother who died of an overdose, and then you had to deal with your sexuality issue, yeah, of being gay, and many other feelings of inadequacy you had about yourself, of your body and, yeah, behavior, whatever, all kinds of ways that you needed to learn how to become a better you or a bigger you.
Yeah, or just to accept the you that I was.
Well, but that's what, yeah, I mean, is, yeah, that instead of a shrinking you,
yes,
to become a full-size you.
Yes, yes.
And so that's what I love about this book, because you don't know what to expect from a title, Big Love. It doesn't say that we're going to climb into a very profound journey of deep understanding of who we need to become and how we need to become. And you use so many experiences in your life that you struggled through to help us all understand how to work with life better.
Yeah, and I think, thank you for recognizing that. And I think it's because I really think we're all the same, basically, truly. If that's one, yeah, thing I was trying to communicate in the book by sharing, because I know that by sharing my experiences, and I've had a Facebook page for several years now where I do a lot of sharing, you know, about my insecurities and fears, and as well as my joys and all of these things. And a large community has gathered around that page, and it's shown me over and over how similar we all are as human beings. And though you don't know my specific grief, you know, you haven't experienced my specific grief, you've experienced your own, and we all know what it's like to feel insecure. We all know what it's like to judge our bodies. We all know everything.
So let me just say that, you know, on Facebook, I don't share my struggles, mm-hmm, because I'm not looking for sympathy.
Yeah.
And you talk about that in the book, that sympathy doesn't really help, because it doesn't resolve anything. It's just maybe a quick stroke, and so what? You know, it's nice that other people feel sorry for you, but it's diminishing at the same time.
Yeah.
So what we're talking about is that on your Facebook page, what you've created is empathy. Mm-hmm. You've found many people who say, wow, we have so much in common.
Yeah, me too.
Let's talk about how much we're all suffering together. So it helps me feel more normal.
Yeah, and less alone.
Right.
Exactly. Absolutely. And that's important, you know, because this reality is difficult. And it's not just difficult for some of us. It's difficult at times for all of us. And I think I noticed that when I'm struggling the most for whatever reason and have the hardest time seeing the light beyond the darkness that I'm experiencing, it's incredibly helpful to be reminded that I'm not alone in my struggle. And I think that that's something that we can offer each other, and it matters. And that's the empathy you're speaking to. It's the willingness to say me too, not with the intention of hijacking the other person's experience, but with the intention of reminding them, hey, I feel you. You know,
I'm reading your book. It was interesting that right away, I understood your grief of losing your family at a young age. Yeah. I had the same horror in my life, and right away I knew we would be able to speak the same language.
Yeah.
And then you had another thing in the book that as a filmmaker,
yes,
you had a big flop.
Yes. Monumental.
And I came out, it wasn't as bad as yours, because I came out with a film in 1986 about running that was very well reviewed. Ebert and Siskel both gave it a thumbs up.
Yeah.
And nobody showed up at the box office. And so, like you, you know, I sat in a movie theater pretty much by myself going, where is everybody?
Yeah.
And how shocking it is to have failed and be faced with that. And it was a horrible failure that you had.
Yeah, absolutely. But it, you know, it forced experiences like that. They force you. Well, it forced me to look at one. How do I even define success and failure? Like, what does that even mean? Because it was painful. It was humiliating.
Right, and you had to suffer that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And what I didn't doubt, I'll tell you, is I definitely went into a depression for just a couple weeks, I'm happy to say. The sting of it lasted much longer, but that hardcore, just like, oh my God, this is horrible, and am I ever going to see the light?
But then you found some wisdom about it.
Absolutely, and I knew, even in that moment, even when I thought, well, there's the end of my screenwriting career, that's what my mind is telling me, I knew I would never stop writing. You know, I knew I wouldn't stop creating. And ultimately, that's all we can control. We can't control who shows up. We can't control how our output is received by critics and audiences. But what we can control is if we're still choosing to show up, if we're still choosing to express our creativity.
And learning from our failures. And often people say, it's hard to be successful unless you've had some failures.
Yeah, and everyone's had failure. Every success has a mountain of failures,
right,
typically. You know, but I also recognize that it's funny because I have, with my book out now, I'm seeing the way my mind is coming in again and wanting people to buy the book and wanting people to like my writing and receive the book well, when ultimately what I learned from my film and what I believe at my core is that success for me is really, how am I showing up with as much love and as much compassion and as much kindness in my heart? Like, how am I showing up as a human being? And how am I being of service to other human beings?
Well, but it starts with yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
It starts with getting over the shame of failure.
Absolutely.
And going deeper and being whole anyway.
Yeah.
And from that wholeness, you want to experience more light and more of what you came into this life for.
Yeah.
And you don't know what it is until you take the next step. But so many people get frozen by their shame, by their failure, and you know, lose belief in themselves. And it's understandable.
Of course.
That's why a lot of us, you know, need help too. We can't all solve our own problems. It's good to have family, friends, and or advisors, coaches, yeah, people who can help us with a flashlight.
Sure.
That we might not have for ourselves. And your book is a flashlight. And that's what's so wonderful, is that it really explores what counts.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, it does. and so I got a lot out of it. Because I understood on my own path how I've had to overcome so many obstacles on my path. And I'm fortunate, I'm a lot older than you, I'm fortunate in my senior years that I can say, you know, I've been taken care of in life. Mm-hmm. I've had many disappointments, huge disappointments, and somehow things are all right.
Yeah.
You know, and I've also been a counselor to many people over many, many, many years who are on the verge of ruin and everything's horrible. And then as time goes by, they find out that life has restored them in new ways, in different ways that were unexpected. And all of a sudden, there's hope. And so your book is really about what light are we holding to carry forward with, you know, what is, and you talk about how, well, there's happiness, you have a happiness challenge in the book that you talk about is, yes, let's, you know, make happiness happen. And then you talk about that you can't just make happiness happen.
No, you can't choose it. Contrary to about 20,000 memes out there that insist happiness is a choice, I don't see it that way at all. You know, I see, but I think happiness is a feeling, and we can't choose our feelings. We feel how we feel, but happiness is something we can absolutely influence because we have control over the choices we're making in our lives. So if we're choosing things that tend to lead us toward happiness, one example I use in the book is tennis. I love to play tennis, and when I play tennis, I'm often feeling good. So I can choose to play tennis knowing that it stands a good chance of making me feel good, but that's very different than choosing happiness.
Yeah, I can't even imagine if you're feeling down and someone says, feel happy.
Choose happiness. Yeah, like who can do that? Nobody. Yeah.
But what I can do is I can minimize the down part of it, the darkness of it. I use tools.
Yeah.
I use emotional freedom technique. I use flower essences, use algorithms,
meditation, walks in nature,
going for a run.
Exactly, whatever works for you. You know, you can figure out what works for you and make more time for those things in your life, and that will serve you, and that's important.
Well, it diminishes, it actually can often even erase the unhappiness and put you in a place of, let's call it happiness or comfort.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, if you're comfortable, why not be happy?
Yeah. I often think we know what we need to do to take care of ourselves, and it really just comes down to doing it, to making time for those things, you know?
Right. And so we each need to choose what it is that will make us happy. And even that doesn't always work.
Sure, absolutely.
And so it's a journey of what counts in life, and slowly we find out what we're happiest about in our lives.
Yeah.
And what we can forgive ourselves for in our lives too.
Yeah.
And that's so much of and there's so much in the book about managing shame, and you know what do I feel awkward about? How does my ego beat me up all the time?
Yeah.
And I'm sure we all have that. And some people have it worse than others, of course.
Of course.
And
but we all know it. Yeah. We all know shame. We all know the self-abusive inner critic. Everyone has that.
We make mistakes.
Yeah.
And then, you know, one time actually, my son, my older son, when he graduated from college, he did very well in college. And he said, Dad, you know, I'm on a roll. So what advice do you have for me to really keep this roll going? And I said, well, I have to tell you that after I got out of college, for 10 years straight, all I did was make mistakes. I was very inadequate, very incompetent. I was extremely unhappy. So many times, so many things fell through. Great disappointments. And if any of them had been any different, you wouldn't be here today.
Exactly.
He said, well, that took some pressure off. So we have to allow that, you know, there are blessings in life of learning from our struggle and of opportunity that often in our unhappiness, we don't have that optimism for mm-hmm. opportunities.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what needs to be shored up a lot in people is hope.
Yeah.
You know, is just getting over this hump that we're in front of or in the middle of, and believe that there's another side.
And it takes work, though. Really, it takes commitment and it takes work. I mean, as you said, some people, for some, that's much harder, that journey to optimism and to hope, than it is for others. But I think for everyone, it takes work, it takes practice, it takes commitment, you know. But I think if we're alive and we're breathing anyway, and the hours are passing anyway, we're well served by putting our energy into continuously looking for the hope, or continuously, at least, if we're going to give all this energy to the negative in a situation, at least give 50% of your energy to looking at the positives in situations.
Well, we can say that, and it's not easy to do.
No, not at all.
And that's why sometimes we need to reach out to others, or to read a book called Big Love.
Thank you. No, it's true. There are teachers everywhere. Teachers in books and radio shows and podcasts, on TV, you know, they're all over.
Right, but some of them are phony baloney.
Yeah, sure.
You know, they just want you to use, you know, magic dust or something that you know, maybe irresponsibly things can just disappear on their own, but sometimes it takes work.
Yeah.
And we have to really climb into finding the deeper truths of who we are and learn to believe in ourselves more,
mm-hmm.
and work from that understanding of how unique and special we each can be if we are able to find it in ourselves.
Yeah, to just be who we are. I really believe that when people are, you know, when they're alive in their authenticity, there's always going to be something beautiful to offer the world. You know, we respond to people when they're living in their truth, I think. And I think that we grow up with so much conditioning from day one, basically. And we're put into a box from day one, how we're supposed to be, what we're supposed to think, who we're supposed to love. You know, that it's very difficult. Yes. That's where a lot of the work comes in.
I had so much input in my young years about not being a good person, being stupid. My parents were good parents, but somehow the outside world was very unsupportive. And, you know, teachers called me the dumb one. Mm. You know, second grade, I spent most of it in the corner of the room with a dunce cap on my head. Jeez. Facing the corner of the room. And it was like, well, that's good conditioning for failure.
Yeah, it takes
failure.
A toll. I mean, that lives with you, you know, as
right.
You know.
And so many of us have to overcome the struggle of conditioning in our younger years and start believing in ourselves through the journey. Seeing, like what you talk about in the book, is when your film failed, it didn't wipe out the fact that you actually produced a film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a big deal.
Or for me, who's someone who's always had not been especially good at finishing any projects, and who had, you know, plenty of folders on my computer with unfinished scripts, just finishing a script, you know, from start to finish, isn't that in and of itself success?
It
and then turn, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's we have to find the value of an inner value, actually, of accomplishment. That is intrinsic rather than extrinsic.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I've always said that to myself. You know, it's like, okay, I'm holding on to the intrinsic.
Yeah. It's not easy, you know,
but
it's worthwhile.
We have to believe in our own fortitude,
yeah,
strength to continue. And so there's so much of how deep we can go to find our own self-love and support ourselves. And so to have a book called Big Love is really about not about big so much as about love, but it helps to have a book called this to kind of be in your corner.
Yeah. I mean, for me, the book, when I talk about love, I'm talking about what I see as the energy that informs all good things in our world, you know, like kindness and compassion, forgiveness. Those are all examples of love in action, as far as I'm concerned. So that's what I'm speaking to. And in my life, what I found over and over and over again is when I'm operating from that energy, no matter the circumstance, I am serving myself and all involved in the most powerful positive way. And so I know that there's always an opportunity to bring love to any situation. And though I don't always do it, you know, sometimes right. I'm just a jerk and impatient right. and blameful.
We're not perfect.
Exactly.
And,
we're all human.
And we each have partners in life who remind us of
yes,
that too.
Yes, 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 exactly. You know, so that's part of the human experience. But as often as I can, when I return to love and ask myself the question, you know, what is love inviting me to do in this moment? I know that I'm serving the world and myself powerfully.
Yes.
And that's where my commitment lives.
Right. And so this is a book that is serving the world and will more and more. I'm glad you have such a big audience on Facebook that can spread the word for you also.
Yeah.
And your publishers, of course. And so it's such a pleasure to talk to you about this, because it's really what life is about, is self-discovery, finding inner truth, mm-hmm. and understanding through that how to live in greater truth with others.
Absolutely.
And to help benefit the world.
It's where I found the most meaning in life. You know, life is about a lot of things, but I think self-exploration, when you're able to do it and when you're able to, you know, really look at who you are and what you're about and ask yourself those questions and answer them honestly
right.
and move forward from that truthful
and
place.
Your book really helps get there. So, Scott Stabile, how can people find you and your book and what website?
Well, my website is just my name, so it's scottstabile.com, STABILE.com. The book is everywhere. I mean, it's on Amazon and it's in stores, and there's an audiobook with me reading it, and there's the ebook, you know, so that's easy to find. And then I really encourage people, if you want to, I do most of my work on Facebook now.
How do they find you on Facebook?
If they go facebook.com/ScottFrankStabile, or just type my name and I'll come up.
Yeah,
you know,
okay.
I'm easy to find on
All
Facebook.
All right, but you just help them get there.
Yeah.
So that's great. So, Scott, thanks so much. It's so great talking to you.
Thank you for having me, Peter. Great to talk to you, too.
Thank you. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, HEART river.org, or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you, and thanks so much for listening.